You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, this is Ankita.
And this is Apoorva.
And you are tuned in to HR Bandit, the podcast where we cover the top news from the world of work every single month. This is our last episode of the year. So if you're new here, we are really excited to have you join us for our closing episode and an action-packed 2026. If this is you returning, a big hug and thank you for returning for our best one yet. Apoorva, I know we have an impressive lineup today, but I have to start by asking, do you shop at Target?
Before we get there, why don't you commend me for joining at 6 in the morning in the holiday week? So thank you for the applause. And yes, about Target, I have always loved shopping there and especially love their home section. Like, for they have a lot of this seasonal decor and stuff. But these days, I'm a regular there for all kid-related essentials.
Okay, firstly, thank you for joining at 6 a.m. Apoorva, you're quite the trooper for having done that. It's not something I can even imagine doing. And on Target, let me throw a light on why I asked that question. Now, Target's been in news for coming up with a 10-4 rule. So, Bandits, if you haven't heard, the 10-4 rule says that the employees are mandated, if they're within 10 feet of the customers, they're required to smile, make eye contact, wave, and use friendly, approachable, and welcoming body language. And if the staff is within 4-foot radius of a shopper, they must also personally greet the customer, initiate a warm, helpful interaction. Now, I know different shoppers have different experiences, but I like to be left alone while shopping unless I'm approaching someone for help. Apoorva, I know you're going in at Target. How are you going to feel about this?
Yeah, I'm a little bit like that too, in the sense that I do get uncomfortable, like if a store associate approaches me while shopping. In my experience though, the cashiers at most stores in the US are pretty warm and try to strike a conversation, which I really don't mind. But the 10 to 4 feet rules seems like taking things a little too far. What it seems like is that this isn't unique to just Target. So Walmart has a 10-foot rule and Disney theme parks have a 10-5 rule. So it looks like, if anything, Target is late to the game.
Look, I've never been to a Walmart and nor a Disney theme park. And I don't like the fact that you brought up Disney theme parks, because now I want to go. But before I go away with the fairies, Apoorva, let's get into our big three stories from November.
All right. So first up, Microsoft is expanding its internal integrity portal to include a new feature called Trusted Technology Review to allow employees to report concerns about how the company's technologies are developed and deployed. For our second story, Singapore joins the expanding list of countries looking to increase their retirement age. And for our third story, we are covering Netflix's age-old keeper test and what other organizations can choose to learn from them.
And Bandits, November definitely kept us busy. There were a lot of pieces of news that we had to sift through. So I'm going to start with Microsoft, which is a company that's found a way of creeping into our top three headlines almost every single month. This month, they made news for introducing something that they're calling the Trusted Technology Review. Now, 2 months ago, in our September episode, we covered Microsoft's firing of 4 employees who participated in protests on the company premises against the firm's ties to Israel as it waged war in Gaza. Now, Microsoft is not the only one. In 2024, Google did something similar when their employees protested against the company's cloud contract with Israel. However, what Microsoft has done now with the introduction of this review is something that Google has not, as far as we can tell. So Microsoft has learned from the incident and found a way to channel feedback from employees and maybe the external world in a productive way.
Yeah, and Microsoft President Brad Smith has sent a memo to all employees that said that the company is expanding its internal integrity portal to include a new feature that they are calling Trusted Technology Review. This tool will allow employees to confidentially flag potential policy violations or raise ethical concerns about the company's technology use. Microsoft is also strengthening its pre-contract review process to ensure additional human rights due diligence on sensitive tech projects.
It looks like when Satya Nadella said that he and his leadership team need to do better, they actually meant it. So Based on internal and external pressure on Israel's use of Azure, Smith also said in the memo that they have informed the Israel Ministry of Defense, or the IMOD, of Microsoft's decision to seize and disable specified IMOD subscriptions and their services, including the use of specific cloud storage and AI services and technologies. Now, I'd say publishing memos like these and acting on what employees are saying definitely helps build trust. It could also be a factor of external pressure that's forcing Microsoft's hand, but I haven't seen other organizations like Google or elsewhere actually come out and say anything similar. Apoorva, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft is definitely standing out here in a good way, but I also think that the real test will be in execution. So rolling something like the trusted technology review is one thing, but building confidence among employees to actually use it is quite another. I mean, you really build employee trust through consistent follow-through, especially when stakes are high and there is so much external scrutiny on these, you know, lot of geopolitical issues as well. So only time will tell whether this becomes a genuinely safe space to raise concerns or just internal tool that looks good on paper. What did stand out to me is that, or at least one point I'd like to make, is I don't think this can only be about geopolitical issues. Yes, of course, Gaza and the international relations brought this to the forefront, but the need for strong internal mechanisms to flag tech-related ethical concerns is much broader. So we've seen this before. If you remember, I'm forgetting the name of the movie, but Tristan Harris, the co-founder of the Center of Humane Technology, who raised early concerns at Google about persuasive technology and how design could manipulate user behaviors. His warnings weren't geopolitical, but they were deeply ethical. And given where we are headed with AI right now, I think employees do need a structured and trusted way to escalate issues like this before they turn into societal problems.
I will be curious about what they raise in the ethical space and how this mechanism evolves, because you do have a point. Like, there's a difference between publishing a memo and actually following through, but there's also an increasing line that we are, you know, trying to balance on what's ethical when it comes to AI and manipulating user behavior. Like, I don't know how you would draw the line there. So maybe this is one for us to follow closely.
Absolutely. Now, let me take us to our second story. Singapore has announced that retirement age will be raised to 64 years from 1st July 2026, applicable to those born on or after 1st of July 1963. Similarly, the re-employment age will rise to 69 years from the same date, applying to those born on or after 1st July 1958. Now, this is being projected as a good news story to enable longer, more flexible careers. A company cannot just ask an employee to retire before their retirement age. It is part of a broader plan to eventually raise the retirement age to 65 and re-employment age to 70 by 2030. With people living longer around the world, this move is expected to help income security and greater financial resilience. Ankita, I have a feeling that I know you have a lot of opinions on this. You want to share them?
Absolutely. And to share my opinion, I'm going to shift the lens from Singapore to France for just a moment. And I do this because France as a country makes me laugh often. And I remember them now because in 2023, over 1 million people protested nationwide when the government proposed to increase the retirement age from 62 to 64. For some context, France has one of the lowest statutory requirement ages in the European Union. Apparently, French retirees spend more time in retirement than most. OECD data shows that Frenchmen typically spend 23.3 years retired, more than any other OECD country and well above Germany's 18.8 years. And I can imagine why. Like, when you look at the standards of living of all the retirees, French retirees have a pretty good standard of living. So I want to say that this is one reason why France's debt is incredibly large, but you and I may come under attack for saying so. Now, I can talk endlessly about the implications of increasing retirement ages, but I'm also aware that this is a work podcast and not an economics lecture. Apoorva, I'm going to hand the baton back to you. What does this mean for our folks in workforce planning?
Well, if employees are going to be in the workforce well into their late 60s, The question isn't just how many years they will work, but it is also how they will work. So first up, organizations will need to intentionally plan for a deeply multi-generational workforce. We are already there, but looks like this is going to be a bigger focus area moving forward. So this would mean re-examining job architecture, designing roles with varied physical and cognitive demands, and creating pathways where people can rotate, scale back, or shift into advisory or project-based roles as they age. Longer careers can be an asset though, but only if the work evolves with the worker. The second implication I see is in succession planning and internal mobility. With people staying longer in senior roles, people will need more flexible career move options, so mid-career talent doesn't stagnate. And lastly, companies must prepare to redesign work environments, and I believe this one is really important, so that older workers can thrive at their own pace. So this could include more offering more autonomy, hybrid or flexible schedules, ergonomic redesigns, job sharing opportunities, and so on. So if you want longevity, you can't you can't just raise the retirement age and then just stick with the same processes that you have.
Yeah, a big ditto on all of what you said. I also like there's this thing where skills are aging faster than people are, and I think that impacts all generations, but especially those who are closer to retirement. We've talked about squiggly careers, and I genuinely think people are going to have more different careers through their lifetime as the retirement age keeps increasing. And I don't see this trend going away. I do genuinely think that there will be a point of time as we live longer that retirement ages will hit 67, 70. And the fact is that if I have a 50-year-old man with skills that I no longer need, but they are open to learning new skills and starting from scratch, it definitely keeps them employed longer. But I do want to bring the compensation aspect into view, right? Like they will not be earning the same because that's no longer economical for the organization. The skill is worth a different amount. So we definitely need to rethink how compensation works for non-linear careers. And it's not like it's even for you and I, right? Like if we decide to switch our career or we need to as the role evolves, we might have to start earning less than we do today and then also like ensure our lifestyle can morph accordingly.
Yeah, and I do think that is irrespective of whether the retirement age gets raised or not. It's something that has to happen anyway, given you know how fast things are changing these days. Like skills are becoming obsolete. It feels like they're becoming obsolete by the hour.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let me take us to our final topic, which is about the Netflix's Keep a Test. Now, while this isn't new, it came back into the spotlight after Netflix's CTO, Elizabeth Stone, spoke about it on a podcast recently. She doubled down on the idea that Netflix doesn't do formal performance reviews. Instead, they rely on continuous feedback and the Keep a Test to decide who stays. What's really interesting is how the Keep a Test has evolved over time. When it first entered public conversation through the Netflix culture deck years ago, it was positioned like a hard-edged rule. In quotes, if a person on your team were to leave for a similar role elsewhere, would you fight hard to keep them? If the answer was no, Netflix believed that you should part ways with that employee with a generous severance. Over the years, though, that idea has become more nuanced. It's less about a snap judgment and more about building a culture of ongoing conversations where both the manager and the employee constantly evaluate their fitment, contribution, and excitement for the work.
Honestly, compared to what most organizations do and are doing right now, this is a radical contrast. In a lot of organizations, managing out underperformers becomes a bureaucratic maze where organizations are buried under like there's PIP, there are forms, there are documentations, there are grievances raised, and it's just like an endless HR checklist. And then by the time someone is finally managed out, there are some burnt bridges. Whereas this approach, I think, puts a lot of responsibility on the managers to give like timely feedback and be direct and thoughtful. But it's also like, I think there is a better understanding on both sides of what's happening and why. I do think if some organization is implementing this, there have to be a lot of checks and balances so that, you know, there aren't biases or like politics that come into picture. And I think Netflix manages to do it because of from what I've heard. Now, this we would love someone from Netflix to actually tell us how much of this is reality versus just news. But it does look like Netflix has strong psychological safety. Otherwise, continuous feedback like that can become continuous threat.
Yeah, and
What I also like about it is that this isn't just top down. Apparently, employees are also encouraged to ask, would I fight to stay here? Am I excited? And do I still want to be on this team? So it's not just like a one-way street where only the manager can enforce the rule. The only thing that worries me, though, is I feel like if managers don't have the right skills, the right abilities to... like you said, if there are biases that could come in, I feel like it can be grossly misused. So realistically, I feel this model would work well in small to mid-sized organizations where leaders are closer to the ground, talent conversations are more transparent, and cultural consistency is easier to maintain. But in large corporations with layers and layers of managers and very uneven leadership capabilities, the risks of misuse could be really high.
Maybe that's why all the organizations around the world are indulging in layoffs to become small and mid-sized with closer to the ground and lesser layers of leadership. Having said that, like, I genuinely think that the litmus test of whether a concept like this works or not is Reddit. So my first natural instinct when I heard about this is to go to Reddit and say, hey, what are people saying about it? And I was very surprised that wherever there was a mention of the keeper test, they weren't negative comments. They were actually positive feedbacks from both employees as well as candidates. So usually on policies like this, there's always a fair amount of employee backlash. So Netflix is definitely doing something right. I am still curious about how rigorously they actually implement this.
Yeah, now, you know, I'm making a mental note of going to Reddit and Blind after this and doing some research. Anyway, so that was a lot, but, you know, it wasn't all. So here's what else you should know before we let you go. Keeping in trend, Jeff Bezos joined as the co-CEO of a new AI startup called Project Prometheus, along with Vic Bajaj. Now, we don't know a lot about the startup, but we definitely know that it has two CEOs. So if you remember Bandits, we covered co-CEOs as a topic in the last pod. Second, when Paramount Skydance offered its employees a choice between returning to office 5 days a week or taking severance, 600 employees packed up their bags and left. And lastly, the Italian parliament approved a new law on AI, the first of its kind in the EU. The AI law, which will enter into force on October 10, sets the core principles governing AI and its use, establishes the responsibilities for governance and supervision in Italy, providing for specific rules in critical sectors such as healthcare, public administration, justice, labor, IP, and criminal law.
Yeah, it is definitely, like, because you mentioned the AI law, there's also the EU, which is making news for, like, slowly relaxing some of its GDPR guidelines, keeping in mind AI. So it is interesting. Now, November had a lot going on. I hope December slows down and lets us off the hook so that if we don't do our top three stories and we're doing our predictions pod, we are actually not missing anything, but only time will tell. And Apoorva, apart from kudos for waking up at 6 a.m., also a big kudos for not having an episode that's dominated by AI.
Not so fast. I'm going to bring up Microsoft once more. So I was looking at their list of jobs that are safe from AI for now, and it made me think that I need to pick up a few more skills. So which skill are you going to perfect over the holidays, Ankita?
Apoorva, I think AI can very well take over any job I can do. And the only one I could find on that list that I could probably scrape through is house painting and dishwashing. So I'm guessing... when they say dishwashing, it means stacking the dishwashers appropriately. But Bandits, like, I would, like, you should go through that list and find something that you can upskill in. I was actually thinking I should try tire replacement and repairs. Apoorva, what are you thinking?
If you're doing tire replacements, I wish I could move near you. But, I mean, I think I would love to take up landscaping because I like gardening and I feel like it's an adjacent skill. So if I end up having a yard someday, I think it's a skill I could put to good use.
Apoorva, I hope you realize that's a lot of playing with mud and hope and your daughter might just join you while doing that. Okay. I know I said, I asked our bandits to look at the AI list and jobs that can be replaced. But if the universe had to give us a Christmas gift or some of the bandits listening on the show, Apoorva, what would you ask for?
Can we save that as a suspense for next one? I feel like at this point, I would say I would love for more sleep, but I'm going to share my more serious response in the next one.
Apoorva, maybe not the next one because that will come out in Jan. Let's put it on our LinkedIn post. So, Bandit, if you feel generous and want to buy us a coffee or maybe just buy us a gift, watch out on LinkedIn to know what's on Apoorva and my wish list. And with that...
Oh, wait. How can you ask me what's on my wish list? And
well, I just said I'm also going to share mine on LinkedIn. That's why I said, like, your post will have your Christmas wish list. Mine will have my Christmas wish list. And, Banis, this may be the last you hear from us this year. So I really hope you take a break before the year ends to reflect on all of the wins. And we hope to see you on the other side.
And on behalf of NHRDN and Ankita, this is Apoorva wishing you happy holidays. And we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.